This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Horrible, one-sided, disastrous. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Wednesday, May 9th. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump used harsh language to condemn the Iran nuclear accord as he announced the U.S. was withdrawing from it. Hear his remarks and Tehran's response.
Primary day where incumbent Democrats in red states are considered vulnerable will have results.
President Trump's personal lawyer received $500,000 from a company tied to one of Russia's richest men with connections to the Kremlin.
And confirmation hearings today for the woman nominated to be the next director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
In the midst of lots of controversy, lots of opposition to her, there was an intriguing letter signed by more than 50 former top national security and intelligence officers, including 6 former CIA directors and 3 former directors of national intelligence and 2 former secretaries of state, all going on the record to support Gina Haspel as the new CIA director.
Wall Street Journal's Jerry Seib on where Ms. Haspel will face tough questioning today and how she plans to respond. President Trump has withdrawn the U.S. from the so-called Iran Nuclear Accord, the program designed to curb and track Iran's nuclear activity. In remarks at the White House yesterday, the president said he planned to institute sanctions against Iran and said the U.S. would sanction any nation that helps Tehran pursue nuclear weapons, as well as U.S. and foreign companies and banks that continue to do business with Iran.
It is clear to me that we cannot prevent an Iranian nuclear bomb under the decaying and rotten structure of the current agreement.
New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, who opposed the agreement in 2015.
The right thing to do would have been to try and come up with our allies with an agreement on those issues and let the nuclear part of this continue as is, because it's not being violated in any way.
The administration has complained that limits on Iran's ability to enrich uranium are set to ease in 8 years under the accord. Officials said the Iran sanctions suspended under the agreement snapped immediately back into effect. Meanwhile, in response, an Iranian lawmaker said today that the country is planning to increase spending on its ballistic missile program. Let's get some analysis now from Matt Mikowiak, Republican strategist, columnist for the Washington Times, and host of a podcast called Mac on Politics. Matt, your reaction.
Well, you know, this has been in the works for some time, and I guess in some ways it's not surprising. This is something the president talked about when he was a candidate. He had basically foreshadowed it, twice before, once at the 6-month mark and once at the 3-month mark. Giving Iran and the European allies time to try to renegotiate it, which I think was something that did occur. The deal could never get satisfactorily agreed to. But look, this was a striking moment. In some ways, what it does is it takes the Iran challenge from being something that Trump could blame Obama for to now being something that he owns himself.
Yeah.
So we're in a new phase now. If Iran acquires a nuclear weapon, that will in many ways be Trump's fault as much as it will be Obama's fault. And now we're entering a different chapter in Middle East relations. There are, relationships with European allies that are on the line. There's obviously the security for Israel that's at stake. There's the Syrian civil war that's involved in all of this. There's a lot of complicated issues involved, and it's not clear what the next step is now the president has taken this step.
What do you think his biggest beef was with this, say, for himself or the United States as a whole?
Well, I think that this is a president who, kind of has a bit of a shallow depth when he looks at issues, and he doesn't get real into the weeds. He wouldn't read a 100-page deal if he had to. But he understands sort of key points. He understands negotiating. He understands deals and leverage and how a deal can be a win-win. And he just did not see in the Iran deal enough of an advantage for the United States. He saw really no way for the United States to continue to put pressure on Iran within the confines of the deal. And, you know, for whatever good or bad you want to say about Donald Trump, I mean, again, throughout his history, he has demonstrated an ability to negotiate deals. And so far, we're seeing at least the initial reports of encouraging signs on North Korea. You know, the Iran challenge is its own challenge in its own way. But you know, I think that in some ways the president has felt emboldened on the Iran question, given that he has had some initial success over North Korea. But I think fundamentally President Trump could not understand why the United States would be giving money to Iran up front and then not be able to verify to his satisfaction that they're doing what they said they would do. And then when you add to that the Israeli government producing evidence just in the last 2 weeks that basically shows Iran was not in compliance with the deal from the very beginning, I think it pushed Trump to a position where he felt he had no choice but to pull out, which is what his instinct has been all along.
Yeah. We're speaking with GOP consultant Mac Mikoviac about President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. I don't know the full details of the whole accord, but it does seem like some of those inspections were fairly weak. Like, I think when they wanted to inspect a military site, there was like 24 hours of negotiations that had to take place, which many people felt just gave Iran time to move stuff if needed.
Yeah, I think, it's just very hard. The more you learn about the Iran deal, the less encouraged you are about it and how it works and whether it makes sense to all sides. And this was a very good deal for Iran, and that's part of why they celebrated it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, look, the challenge here, I think, for the president is he now has to develop a strategy related to Iran.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Mikoviac, Republican strategist. Quick clarification, by the way. There are 24 days of negotiations, not 24 hours, 24 days of negotiations if inspectors want to inspect a military site in Iran. Results are in for three closely watched Republican primaries for U.S. Senate. In West Virginia, Attorney General Patrick Morrisey defeated former coal executive Don Blankenship and Congressman Evan Jenkins. President Trump had argued, or rather had urged, GOP voters to reject Mr. Blankenship as doomed to lose to incumbent Democratic Senator Joe Manchin in November. Mr. Morrisey, meanwhile, is already looking to the general election.
Joe Manchin has become just another rubber stamp for the liberal Washington elite agenda.
Meanwhile, Indiana businessman Mike Braun and Ohio Congressman Jim Renacci also both won their state's Republican Senate primaries. Mr. Renacci had the backing of President Trump.
We have to be able to change Ohio and make sure that Ohio is moving forward. And in November, we're going to do that.
In all three states, voters picked Republican nominees to take on some of the most vulnerable incumbent Senate Democrats in this year's midterm elections. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Wednesday. A company created by President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, received a $500,000 payment last year from an investment fund tied to a Russian oligarch. More from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Mr. Cohen's company, Essential Consultants, received payments from an investment management firm called Columbus Nova, whose biggest investor is a company founded by Viktor Veskelberg, who has close ties to the Kremlin. Essential Consultants was also used to make a $130,000 payment last fall to an adult film actress who claims she had a fling with Mr. Trump 12 years ago. The payments were revealed by a lawyer for actress Stephanie Clifford, known professionally as Stormy Daniels. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Separately, AT&T said it made payments to Mr. Cohen's company in 2017 for insights into the administration at a time when the telecommunications giant needed government approval for an billion-dollar takeover of Time Warner. The company did not say what kind of information it received from Mr. Cohen. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump has withdrawn the U.S. from the landmark nuclear accord with Iran, abruptly restoring harsh sanctions in the most consequential foreign policy action of his presidency. He declared he was making the world safer, but he also deepened his isolation on the world stage and revived doubts about U.S. credibility.
Powerful sanctions will go into full effect if the regime continues its nuclear aspirations. It will have bigger problems than it has ever had before.
The 2015 agreement, which was negotiated by the Obama administration and included Germany, France, and Britain, had lifted most U.S. and international economic sanctions against Iran. Today, France's foreign minister said the deal is not dead and that French President Emmanuel Macron will speak to his Iranian counterpart, Hassan Rouhani, later in the day. Iran also signaled its willingness to talk. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in North Korea to finalize plans for a summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Pompeo will also press North Korea for the release of three detained U.S. citizens whose imminent release Trump has been hinting at. Republican voters have rejected ex-convict Don Blankenship in a West Virginia Senate primary in which he sold himself as Trumpier than Trump, but was opposed by the president. GOP voters in Indiana chose wealthy businessman Mike Braun over two sitting congressmen to lead the party's charge against a Democratic senator in the fall. Braun celebrated his victory.
I built my company on the idea that you compete hard. I mean, you get out there and dig every day. But you also find a way to kind of get along with competition.
In Ohio's gubernatorial primary, Richard Cordray, the former director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau under President Obama, easily won his primary against former Democratic Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Here's some great news for many of you listening this morning. A potential new cure for baldness has been discovered using a drug originally intended to treat osteoporosis. Researchers from the UK say the new cure could make a real difference to people who suffer hair loss. Since the two drugs currently on the market both have side effects and are not always effective.
Well, I don't see me going that route.
What, getting more hair?
You're right. I have a receding hairline now, but when I go bald, I think I'm just going to leave it.
Okay.
It's, you know.
Well, you could shave it all off, too.
Right. So just like bald is trendy, right?
Yeah.
So thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. In the world of retail, it's increasingly out with the old, like traditional department stores or aging fast food chains, and in with new wellness-oriented gyms and eateries that are in vogue among consumers. A growing number of Pilates studios, juice shops, and other fitness and health-focused businesses are filling the void as larger companies close locations. It's a story by Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today. Charisse, what's happening?
Yeah, you know, you've got a lot of traditional retailers and food chains, from Subway, which is closing about 500 stores this year, to Sears, to JCPenney, that are leaving these spots, you know, vacant in malls and shopping centers. So increasingly, you're seeing fitness-oriented businesses move in. It might be a smoothie shop or a juice bar or a Pilates studio or a yoga studio. And it's really kind of a win-win-win because increasingly that's what shoppers are looking for, that they don't just want to shop and buy things at a mall. And fitness is a big part of the lifestyle. It's good for the shopping centers that need to fill these voids. And it's great for the fitness businesses because they get this steady stream of traffic and a footprint, you know, an actual space that fits their needs that's already there.
Wow. So is like a boutique fitness studio able to take up, though, all that space of like unoccupied Sears or Toys R Us?
No, a lot of times the shopping centers are cutting those department stores up. You know, they're not replacing them with another big retailer because you've got fewer retailers to begin with, and they may not always be the best magnets for traffic. So what they do is they cut it up into four, five, six different places. So you might have a Gold's Gym, and then also an H&M, and then also a Marshall's. So it's a lot of different businesses going into that one space.
Who picks up the cost of, like, the reconfiguring of these places? The owner, or does the tenant have to share some of that cost?
You know, it can be both. I mean, if you're buying the space, I mean, some of these big box retailers actually owned that spot.
Oh, okay.
But a lot of times it is the business. Like there's one restaurant chain called Vitality Bowls. And when they move in, they're doing their renovations. But the good thing is there's already that kind of infrastructure in place if there was another food shop there before, like a Subway. So it saves them thousands of dollars.
Hmm. We're speaking with Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today, about her story entitled From Toys R Us to Pilates Studios, Malls Fill Empty Stores with Latest Fitness Fads. Has this become like the great mall savior?
Well, it's one of them. I mean, they're doing a lot of different things now. They're putting in offices. They're putting in apartments in some cases. Family attractions are a big deal. You know, Dave & Buster's, where you can go and bowl and eat, an aquarium. So they're trying a lot of different things because malls are not getting the kind of traffic that they used to. So fitness is kind of one of many concepts, but it's a very popular one.
Thanks, Charisse. Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark, but shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock identity theft protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware or emerging viruses. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now and get an additional 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com and enter the promo code Gordon. That's promo code Gordon at LifeLock.com for an additional 10% off.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, May 9. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. U.S. withdraws from the Iran nuclear deal. Confirmation hearing today for Gina Haspel, nominated to be the CIA director. Michigan authorities excavating wooded areas in Macomb Township, looking for the remains of up to six missing girls. Harassment of NFL cheerleaders will be the subject of a call today between attorneys and league officials. Mariners lefty James Paxton threw a no-hitter last night against the Blue Jays. And why the CDC put ticks on a poppy seed muffin for all of Twitter to see. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. During Small Business Month, Dell is offering up to 40% off select PCs with 8th-gen Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. President Trump's choice to lead the CIA will tell the Senate Intelligence Committee today in prepared remarks that if she is confirmed, the spy agency will not restart interrogation programs such as those used on detainees after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Meanwhile, is Gina Haspel, the consummate intelligence professional who was supported by six former heads of the CIA and who once befriended Mother Teresa, or is she a reminder of what a Democratic senator calls, quote, one of the darkest episodes in the CIA's history, tied to a period of what some call brutal interrogation of terrorism suspects? Gina Haspel, the deputy director of the CIA, is both. So says Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. Her confirmation hearing begins today on Capitol Hill. Jerry, how do you see it?
It's been, you know, it's an interesting controversy. A lot of it's been kind of in the back rooms of Washington, and it comes to the forefront this week when Gina Haspel's confirmation hearing to be CIA director starts. And one of the interesting things that happened amidst lots of controversy and lots of opposition to her because of her association with the policy of enhanced interrogations, which some people think are harsh interrogations, other people think are torture of terror suspects after 9/11, that in the face of that, there was an intriguing letter signed by more than 50 former top national security and intelligence officers, including six former CIA directors and three former directors of national intelligence and two former secretaries of state, all going on the record to support Gina Haspel as the new CIA director. And so one of the interesting questions I tried to explore was, amidst all this controversy, which most intelligence people don't like because they hate the idea of public scrutiny of what they do in this particular way, why have they all chosen to speak out in favor of Gina Haspel? And, you know, there are a variety of reasons, and one is that they really think she's qualified, but another one is that I think they believe that the president, this president, Donald Trump, picking an intelligence pro kind of protects the intelligence community from an administration that's been skeptical of it in the past, and that maybe she's uniquely qualified to actually close the book on the debate about enhanced harsh interrogation, terror, torture, whatever you want to call it, because she will likely say, we the CIA, didn't want to get into this in the first place, and I don't think that should be what we do in the future.
Wow. So is this necessarily a Republican versus Democrat issue when it comes to support of Ms. Haspel?
No, that's what's the other intriguing aspect of this. It is definitely not. I mean, you have, for example, John Brennan, who was the CIA director under Barack Obama, who's been just about as harsh a critic of the president and his administration, President Trump and his administration, as anybody, is one of the people who signed the letter supporting her, as did people who ran intelligence communities in the Republican administration, as did Henry Kissinger, who's advised the Trump administration. So you actually have legitimate bipartisan support amongst these intelligence pros. Now, I should hasten to add that there's another letter signed by about 100 retired military officers who say they're troubled by the whole precedent of enhanced interrogation and torture. That's not what the U.S. should get into. It's not. It puts Americans at risk overseas when that becomes the pattern, and therefore we oppose her. But I think, as some of people have pointed out to me, that's a group of people who don't really know Gina Haspel. The people who know her are supporting her by and large.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor Jerry Seib. He's written a piece entitled Why Intelligence Pros Have Swung Behind the CIA's Gina Haspel. Haspel, will we find out Wednesday during the confirmation hearings where she stands on this and perhaps her willingness to close the book?
I think we will. I mean, she inevitably has to answer the question, you know, what do you think now, and do you have some regrets? I don't know how she'll answer the regrets part, because one of the things that has really aroused her critics, two things are that she may have temporarily been in charge of a detention facility where some of this interrogation took place, but I think more importantly, she was chief of staff to the director of clandestine operations at the CIA when he ordered the destruction of tapes that showed some of these enhanced interrogation techniques. The CIA has officially exonerated her from any responsibility for that. She was a chief of staff, not the principal. It was not her call. She was just executing an order to draw up a memo. But I think that that will inevitably create an opportunity for people to ask, you know, was this a mistake? And I think what she's going to say is, this business of doing interrogations of suspects is not something the CIA should be asked to do. We didn't look for this job in the first place. Yep. We took it because nobody else was there to do it after 9/11. And I now think it's a mistake for the agency to go back down that road again.
Thanks, Jerry. It's Jerry Seib, Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor. Confirmation hearing today for Ms. Haspel. Confirmation vote could be next week. It's 19 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you haven't been able to stop sneezing in recent weeks, you're not alone. Allergy season is in full swing, with this season being the worst in memory for many people. Why is that? Lots and lots of pollen, for starters. Prime example came from Millville, New Jersey, where a video has gone viral showing a pollen cloud enveloping a construction site. In the video, a digger loader driven by a man named Eric Henderson is seen gently bumping into a tree, releasing a cloud of pollen thick enough to make allergy sufferers sneeze just by watching it.
Ooh.
The video has been watched nearly 400,000 times since it was posted earlier this week.
What was the reaction from some of the other guys on the site?
Dude! Come on!
If it was me, I would probably run. But I mean, every car in New Jersey right now is covered in green.
Yeah.
Basically, we're all just driving green cars at this point because of all the pollen.
I'll say it's bad and like... I don't overreact. I'll sneeze on occasion.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, it's the itch on the roof of my mouth.
Yes.
That's, for whatever reason, that's the way I react to the pollen, and I'm like, you know, constantly like clucking, trying to get rid of the itch. Yep. Then it makes my mouth raw. You know, it's a mess.
Yes, it's a sign of spring.
But New Jersey pollen does not compare to some parts of the South.
Yes.
Like where my parents are in South Carolina, this is a time of year where they actually have to use windshield wipers to get it off the car. That's how thick it is. Right. So I'm not complaining about New Jersey pollen. I've seen it much worse elsewhere.
And we're just glad that it's not like 30 degrees here, too.
Oh, right. That's it.
And by now, Gordon, we've all become used to the sight of adults behaving badly at sporting events and even at their kids' sporting events. But things may have hit a new maturity low over the weekend when a vicious-looking brawl broke out at a charity cornhole tournament in Georgia. The melee was caught on video during the Douglas County Chamber Cornhole Tournament to benefit a charity that raises scholarship money over what was reportedly a scoring dispute. The high stakes may have also been a contributing factor. There was a $500 cash prize, which was apparently too much for people to keep their cool over, and punches were thrown. This forced an angry tournament organizer to get on the loudspeaker to try and shame the rowdy participants to knock it off.
We will stop this tournament right now. We are adults. And this is ridiculous. It is a cornhole tournament fundraiser.
Man.
The Douglas County Chamber released a statement saying it's unfortunate that an event that has been so successful in providing scholarships for students and young professionals for the past 7 years was overshadowed by a small group of people on Sunday acting inappropriately.
She sounded tough. Yeah, I mean, there was detention to follow if that didn't end.
That is true. Well, she needed to. They were throwing haymakers. I mean, this was not this wasn't just pushing and shoving. This was more than a baseball brawl. Yeah. You know what I mean? There were some serious punches being thrown here.
In a non-contact competition like cornhole.
Yes.
Wasn't a guy who was 45, like breaking up a double play, spikes up at second
base.
Right,
right.
No. This is a non-contact cornhole tournament for charity.
These guys must be a lot of fun to play golf with, I can only imagine.
Well said. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Alligators on a beach? Killer whales in a river? CBS News says it may sound like a mismatch, but a new study is warning that humans should get used to seeing more large predators in unexpected places in the future. According to researchers at Duke University, potentially dangerous animals are not exploring new territory for the first time. They're actually trying to recolonize former hunting grounds taken over by humans. In the journal Current Biology, Duke researchers explain that animal populations have rebounded in recent years thanks to conservation and environmental protection laws. In recent weeks, hordes of alligators have been terrifying residents in places like Florida and Texas as they walked onto highways, parking lots, and even front porches, apparently in search of mates. Tragedy, by the way, struck Monday after an alligator wandered onto Interstate 95 in South Carolina and was hit by a car. A mother and her two young children were killed after the collision sent the family's vehicle veering into a tree. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Iranian hardline lawmakers lit a paper U.S. flag on fire at Parliament today after President Trump's nuclear deal pullout, shouting death to America. The impromptu demonstration reflects broad public anger in Iran after Trump's decision, which threatens to destroy the 2015 nuclear accord. Trump made his announcement yesterday.
This was a horrible one-sided deal that should have never, ever been made. It didn't bring calm, it didn't bring peace, and it never will.
But Senator Chuck Schumer says this pullout could have negative implications for the U.S. going forward.
You're making it harder to go after Iranian activities that are really dangerous, and you're probably making it harder to come to a North Korea deal.
The French, British, and German foreign ministers will meet Iranian representatives next week to consider next steps. Stormy Daniels' lawyer says he has information showing that Michael Cohen, President Trump's longtime personal attorney, received $500,000 from a company associated with a Russian billionaire within months of paying hush money to Daniels. Lawyer Michael Avenatti also said hundreds of thousands of dollars streamed into Cohen's account from companies including Novartis, AT&T, and Korea Aerospace. AT&T confirmed its connection last evening. Police went door-to-door in Hawaii to roust residents near two new vents emitting dangerous gases in areas where lava has been pouring onto streets and backyards for the past week. Hawaii County Civil Defense Administrator Talmadge Magno says these vents pose new dangers, and people who are reluctant to evacuate should do so immediately.
Paxton ready. Here's the windup and the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a one-hopper to third. Seager's got it. Toss across. Ball game is over. James Paxton has just thrown a no-hitter.
That's what it sounded like on Cairo in Seattle as James Paxton of the Mariners threw the third no-hitter of the season. With a 5-0 win over the Blue Jays in Toronto, Paxton became the first Canadian to pitch a no-hitter in his home country.
That's good stuff. He looked, by the way, generally shocked when he got doused with the Gatorade bucket.
Did he?
What did you think was coming? like he was in shock over the coldness or something? I don't know. Fun times there. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. It all started with a tweet from the CDC posing a question. Ticks can be the size of a poppy seed. Can you spot all 5 ticks in this photo? The CDC attached images showing a poppy seed muffin with no fewer than 5 blood-sucking ticks hidden on top, part of a CDC effort to warn Americans of tick-borne infections such as Lyme disease. USA Today says social media had a field day with people saying things like they'll never be able to eat poppy seed muffins again. The replies, many revolted, some 900 in all, and the CDC then issued a tick-in-cheek apology that read, "Sorry we ticked some of you off. Don't let a tick bite ruin your summer." May begins the 3-month span during which more people will get tick bites than any other in the U.S. The CDC suggests the number of diagnosed cases of Lyme disease may be 300,000. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.